This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and joining me on The Breakfast Grill today is Rita Sim, a director and co-founder of the think tank Center for Strategic Engagement or CENSUS, and Yang Bohomat, Dr. Ong Kian Ming, DAP Member of Parliament for Sedang, and a long time and a very frequent guest on BFM, in fact, and a friend. Thank you so much for joining me. We're still in the Chinese New Year mood, I guess. Thank you so much for taking time out and joining us this morning.
Thanks for inviting us. 恭喜发财.
Yeah, 恭喜发财. And 新年快乐. Yes. I want to start with the Prime Minister's and Deputy Prime Minister's messages, on Chinese New Year. The Prime Minister said of the Chinese community, he says, they have made a tremendous contribution to Malaysian culture, society and economy. The results of their hard work and sacrifice is evident in every part of this country. They have done so hand in hand with their fellow citizens, including those of other races who call Malaysia home. Now, more pointedly, I think the Deputy Prime Minister, Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, expressed hopes that the Chinese community would return support to government, which I guess he means the Barisan National Coalition. What do you make of this Chinese New Year message, both of them, I think, taken together? Rita, could I start with you?
Well, I think the message is very clear that he's also attempting to try to, get back and win back the hearts and minds of the Chinese community. I think there is that intention in mind.
Win back because it was lost, and if so, lost how?
Well, I think that everybody was very clear already about the results of the GE13 and how the voting pattern went. Following a number of the events that happened last year, I think there is actually an attempt to actually try and perhaps reconnect back with the community and using the Chinese New Year as the platform to do so.
I think those are quite standard messages during Chinese New Year by the Prime Minister and the Deputy Prime Minister. But I think what the Chinese community is looking for is something that is more substantive and, something that's more sustained, not just during Chinese New Year. And then when it's not Chinese New Year, then it's time sort of like to highlight the Chinese as bogeymen in other areas. So I think as long as the trust deficit is there, I don't really think the Chinese vote will come back to the Barisan Nasional anytime soon.
Kian Ming, you're obviously from the other side of the aisle, and I'm guessing also your criticisms, and they are valid. I mean, one, I think, only has to look at the Bursay rally and the counter rally by, with many different names. They were called Richards, I think, rather mistakenly referencing Thailand. But that, and also I thought was very interesting, and I want your opinions on this, is the appearance of China's ambassador, His Excellency Huang Huikang, in Chinatown. I mean, those are a very interesting moment, I think, in Malaysian politics. Both the Marwah Melayu rally threatening Chinatown, as well as the ambassador's appearance. I don't know if you have any thoughts on what this really means for ethnic relations in this country. Kian Ming?
I think the issue of the Chinese ambassador being there, and then I think subsequent moves by the Chinese government to make overtures to overseas Chinese to, you know, go back to China, those things I think are quite well accepted among the Chinese community. But I think we have to remember that the Chinese who are living here in Malaysia, our destiny is the hands of the government of the country, as well as the political parties in this country. So I think our struggle has to be domestic, not looking at external forces to try to help the country in those ways.
I mean, Rita, did you think the ambassador's appearance complicated matters for the Chinese community, or just muddied the waters in terms of the larger question of Bursay, what it stood for, and such?
Well, I think with the Chinese ambassador, there's just genuine concern because of the what has happened is that there's very strong now G2G trade with China. And obviously, they do pay attention to what happens to all the Chinese, different Chinese communities around the world. As far as the Chinese in Malaysia are concerned, I really feel that, you know, as you've mentioned, like the bursae, there's still a lot of, it's highlighting the sort of the differences and still the huge perception gaps among the communities that are living in Malaysia. Okay. One thing is that I don't think I would like to focus too much on that, except that what is actually happening to the Chinese community is that it's getting smaller, because for about 30.1 million population now, the Chinese community is only standing about 22%, which is just under 7 million. So what has, you know, what has happened and what is going on and what is the impact of this population and demographic change? And having said that also, what has happened is that although the Chinese population may be 22% of the demographic population, it's actually 29% of the electorate population.
Well, that's an interesting fact. In fact, if we could just focus, before we get to the question of demographic change, the question of Chinese diversity. Rita, I'm holding two books. You have a book here, authored by you and Fu Kay Sung, Give and Take, Writings on the Malaysian Chinese Community, and also Unmistakably Chinese, Genuinely Malaysian. Both very handsome books, one with red velvet cake on it. I'm going to ask you perhaps after the show why you put red velvet on your cover. But Kian Ming first.
And the other one is in yellow.
The other one is in yellow.
Yes. One is in red and one is in yellow.
Okay. The question of Chinese diversity, is there a single Chinese community out there that you as a politician, Kian Ming, speak to, your party speaks to, or are we looking at the differences between people in Terengganu and Kelantan and people in Penang as opposed to people in Sabah and Sarawak? What is Chinese diversity like?
Well, I think first of all, there are some commonalities among the Chinese community, such as, for example, the emphasis on education and the fact that almost 90% of Chinese community send their kids to Chinese schools. And also the fact that probably more than 80% of the Chinese community did not vote for the government in the 13th general election. However, that being said, there's I think this the mistaken notion that there's only one Chinese community needs to be dispelled, because it is very diverse. And I think I would also put the same kind of assertion on the Malay as well as the Indian and other communities in Malaysia, because you have dialect differences, you have differences in terms of background, education background, you have differences in terms of class, and all sorts of other differences that are also manifested in other races in Malaysia, not just the Chinese.
Rita, when you look at the way political parties do their messaging, do you feel, Rita, that they are putting out a single message? I mean, when they speak to the community, many communal-based parties serve their communities by speaking to them as if they were singular. And what is the fate of this this kind of politics as Malaysia sort of transforms?
Well, I think that, you see, historically, even with the MCA when they first started, right, the focus of the Chinese community has always entirely been quite economic, you know, in nature. So if you, but of course, over time, I think that even with the way that they're sending their children to, whether they're sending their children to Chinese schools, national schools, or now private schools, and by the way, there's now actually slowly there is a decline in parents sending their children to Chinese schools, and you can see the numbers actually now dwindling. Before, there were like 10,000 entrants from the Chinese community into primary one, but recently there's only 7,000. So what has happened? Why have the Chinese community changed the way that they are now sending their, educating their children? I think there's also some economic reasons and opportunity and competitive advantage. Because now Chinese parents are thinking, do I send them to Chinese schools? Do I send them to national schools? Do I send them to private schools that are now coming up where there's a lot of emphasis in English? Or do I migrate? Okay, there's a lot of people don't talk about the Chinese community that has already migrated and out and left and abandoned, I would say, Malaysia.
Kianming, when you speak to the Chinese community, your party speaks to the Chinese community. Your party is a multi-ethnic party, but it's seen as a Chinese-based party, meaning a party that has largely gotten its support from the Chinese community. How does the messaging even work?
I think for the younger generation, I want to emphasize that many of the Malaysian Chinese are actually looking for solutions that are more practical, and I think I would call them Malaysian-based solutions. And I think that's what I myself, and as well as many like-minded colleagues in my party, is trying to speak out on. Not just trying to look for Chinese solutions, but Malaysian solutions for all, perhaps that may be tailored for the Chinese community in certain areas.
I would like to contradict that a little bit. Although there are people who are the Chinese community who are looking for the Malaysian students, but why are the Chinese community also hedging their bets? Why is it that you have buses of school children in Johor, right, going into Singapore schools? Why is the Chinese community now sending them to private schools where English will be the medium of instructions? And why are Chinese parents also telling their children, try and seek and your fortunes are perhaps outside
elsewhere,
Malaysia.
Yeah. Because they've lost trust in the Malaysian education system.
I want to come back to the statement you made, Kianming, just now about your party and how it's messaging. Now, we had a recent survey by Institute Daryl Esan talking about how the DAP is viewed by especially the Malay community in Selangor. There was, I think, an overwhelming, 2/3 of those surveyed said that they viewed the party as a Chinese party, advancing a Chinese agenda, not multiracial. Though I think there was one point of the survey suggested that when the Malay community had say individuals like yourself as MPs, the responses, the negative response was somewhat moderated, but still it comes back to a problem for the DAP. Now, how do you make sense of this? Is there a Chinese agenda out there, and how does your party kind of deal with that?
Well, I think historically speaking, when the party was perhaps not as strong as it is now, there was more pressure to just focus more exclusively on the needs of the non-Malay community. You know, we've always had many Indian members and leaders and MPs and aduns. But I think we're at a stage right now where we are looking at a much more broader agenda. Things like public transportation, issues beyond just Chinese education, issues about rubbish management and really a very basic day-to-day and also policy stuff, which I think is attracting a larger group of people, especially young people from all races.
Now, Rita, please.
I just like to pick up on Kianming's point. I think what is also very interesting is that perhaps it's not so clearly known. There are lots of non-Chinese that are now entering Chinese schools as well. It's something like about maybe 25% of the total Chinese school population are non-Chinese. So there is also a community, you know, other communities out there they feel that they have to pick up the Chinese language for various reasons, for connecting, for economic reasons and opportunities that could arise from China and being able to speak in Chinese,
right,
in Mandarin.
Rita, I just want to draw your attention to what Kianming has just said about the party. And I think that what is interesting about the DAP is that as a Chinese-based party now trying to expand its reach, become more democratic, getting in a lot of, expanding their message beyond the interest of the Chinese community, a larger democratic one. And their kind of induction of young Malay leadership, right? Now, if you remember Telo Intan in 2014, Diana Sophia, put there somebody who, in a by-election, should have done well because the party had done well.
Yeah.
What happened in Telo Intan? What does it say about the Chinese community there?
I think what has happened with the DAP is that definitely they have the support of the Chinese votes. But I think their challenge is actually now getting the Malay votes. It's not so much
wasn't there an erosion of Chinese votes?
I think that was mostly because the turnout rate dropped from about 81-82% to 70%.
Yeah.
Many of the outstation Chinese voters didn't go back to vote.
And the introduction of Malay leaders in parties such like the DAP, it happened with Gerakan, but you also would also see that they were not even very successful with that. So they ended up still being like a Chinese-based party.
Yeah.
So but what it actually means is that there's quite a lot of, that means there's actually a lot of pressure. And here is that although we attempt to go multiracial, but it seems that there is still a lot of pressure and gaps in this, that it doesn't, it's not, I would say that if it's multiracial, it should be kind of like 50-50.
Yeah, but what was encouraging is after the candidature of Diana, after the introduction of Diana as a candidate, I definitely saw, even with my own eyes, genuine and increased interest among the younger Malay community to want to try to explore and even join DAP. So, for example, in the Majlis Perbandaran Kajang now, we have Rara or Sepura Othman as one of the DAP councillors in that area.
I mean, I can understand why, in fact, there might be even a kind of cynical dimension to this, right? Mm. If you're an ethnic minority in a Chinese-based party, a Chinese-majority party, you're likely to rise up the ranks faster because there's less competition, right? And, you know, you want that representation. But really, Kian Ming, is the Chinese community ready to accept non-Chinese, say like Diana Sophia, as a representative of their interests? And beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that among the DAP, we've had a long history of Indian MPs and Aduns contesting and winning in Chinese majority areas, and they've served their constituencies very well. So I think having Malay MPs and Malay Aduns in some of these areas would not be a significant challenge. But I think the challenge for the DAP is actually to field more Malay and Bumiputra candidates in Bumiputra majority areas to see whether we can win in those areas or not.
Rita, what do you think of that strategy? I mean, is an Indian candidate from the DAP the same as a Malay candidate from the DAP?
I think that when it comes to a question of leadership, I don't think that if you are really moving towards multiculturalism, you shouldn't see anybody as Indian or Malay. I think but the reality on the ground is such that there are still needs of the Indian community, needs of the Malay community, and the needs of the Chinese community. I don't know whether there's kind of like an overplay with the Chinese community these days, right? Because the demographic change that is that is happening. Because if you look at how the population growth is going, you would see that the Malay Muslim Bumiputra community is the one that is actually increasing, and that probably by 2020 it would be about 70%. So anything out of the electorate determination would be with the other communities as well. So I don't want to kind of like really so much focus on are the Chinese community, are they really the kingmakers, or are they, because they only they're only in 38 of the 222 parliamentary seats, you know, in majority. So that, although they might be one of the three legs of the community, there's still Sabah and Sarawak. And we haven't talked about the Chinese in Sabah and Sarawak and how different they are from people here.
Yeah, that gives me an opportunity to bring in Kian Ming. Kian Ming, you work in Sarawak quite a bit. Now, what's your sense of the Chinese community in Sarawak?
Well, in the past, the Chinese community have been very strong supporters of the ruling government, the Barisan Nasional in Sarawak. But we saw with the 2011 state elections, there was a shift, and there was a further shift in the 2013 general election, with many of the Chinese in the urban areas are voting for the opposition. I think it will be a challenge in the upcoming Sarawak state elections. But I think just to re-emphasize what Rita said just now, given the fact that the Chinese population is dwindling, I think what's important for myself and also for my party is that we recognize that each community faces its own unique challenges. But at the same time, these are common challenges that Malaysia faces as a nation as a whole. So what we need to do is actually to find solutions that are applicable across communities instead of just saying that I want problems. I want solutions to the Chinese problems or Indian problems or Sarawak problems or Sabah problems.
I mean, that's a kind of aspirational statement, right? But, yes. You know, the question really is, you know, after decades of this kind of racialized thinking and perhaps, you know, the development of a lot of mutual suspicion, isn't there a deep-seated impulse among a lot of Malaysians in the Chinese community included of wanting to kind of corral, wanting to kind of protect the little that they have? You know, is for instance, Penang in danger of becoming a kind of Chinese enclave led by the DAP? Rita?
Actually, the Chinese community historically has been in Penang for a very long time, as they have been in Malacca for a long time. You have Chinese communities that have lived here for 6 or 7 generations. So actually, even the demographics of Penang is actually even changing, all right? It's not that it's now maybe about 50-50, but I think that it's going that will change in time to come. I guess that it's all a question of urbanization also. Where is and the trend is towards urbanization. So you will find that the Chinese have been urbanized probably early because they tend to be found more in the urban areas. I just like to also make a point about how the Chinese community they've actually spread their wings quite far out as well, you know, because education has become very important for them. So they've actually hedged their bets, right? Even in terms of their businesses or with their children in education, that they either send them abroad or they have already got businesses in other countries. Okay, yeah. So it's not, they've already expanded outside the Malaysian horizon. And what you have is also, what is left back is maybe the SMEs here that in the trading areas and in the small businesses. But a lot of businesses have actually already gone out.
Let me just quickly jump on that. I think Rita mentioned that and also the migration issue earlier. So to put it in context with the aspirational values that I talked about just now, many Malaysians have migrated overseas, including many Chinese. You know, I recently looked at the electoral roll and found that there were about 8,000 Chinese over the last 2 years that had shifted their citizenship to Singapore. Right. So, you know, to want to try to attract some of these people to come back to Malaysia or to try to contribute to Malaysia in some capacity or other, it's not to say that, look, we are trying to reach out only to the Chinese, but we have to provide better governance, better infrastructure, better opportunities for all people, you know, and that's the way in which you can get some of these people to come back.
Are we talking exclusively about the business and trading middle class, upper middle class of Chinese? Or what about the working class of Chinese? I mean,
it's
rural
a struggle
Chinese,
for them.
Isn't it? And who represents their interests? Who's speaking on behalf of working class Chinese?
So let me also jump in on that in terms of trying to identify that problem. I think one of the major problems associated with the Chinese community is rural-urban migration. So we see the hollowing out of many small towns that used to be, you know, have a lot of Chinese in there. Many of them have moved to the cities. Some of them have gone up the economic ladder, but many of them have not. So I think, you know, in order to address those kind of concerns, we need to address very core issues of public transportation, of accessible housing in the urban areas, and then also to try to find some ideas to reinvigorate the smaller towns in Malaysia, not just for the Chinese community, but for all the people that are living in these economically depressed areas.
There's a huge perception gap. Actually, people always think that all Chinese are well-to-do. It's not true at all. There is actually really an underclass of Chinese. And if you look at the 450 new villages, well, becoming they are now old villages. There's still about 1 million of those of Chinese living in those new villages, right, all around the country. And they are generally the older ones, and they have to, they're economically quite constrained, you know. They need their children who are working in the urban areas to actually bring back money to them.
And also on the line, we have Temenggong Dato' Vincent Lau Lee Ming, President of the United Schools Committees Association of Malaysia, or Dongzhong. Thank you so much, Dato', for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
I understand that you've been listening into the conversation. I just want to quickly ask you if you have any of the points that were raised over the last half an hour struck you in particular.
I think they were talking about the number of Chinese students entering this Chinese primary school. That is true because the entry into the Chinese primary school has been coming down. I think one of the reasons is that because the Chinese population is dropping. That is one of the reasons. I think the other reason is also, of course, I think as far as the Chinese community is concerned, if they have other options, this sort of thing, meaning that if they, you know, can provide better education or where there is a place that, you know, they think that, you know, there is a provided the children the better education itself, they were may consider at alternative these sort of things. Like, for example, sending the children to this international school, these sort of things. But I think the parents, the Chinese parents, I think they still want their children to learn the Chinese language, to be able to speak Chinese language. Therefore, under that kind of situation, these are the challenges that the Chinese primary school is facing. Because for children to go into Chinese primary school, I think, you know, of course, because they need to learn three languages, this sort of thing, it's quite tough for the students.
Now, I understand, so there is both the economic imperative. We talked about needing to learn Mandarin as an important language globally, but also the learning of English. And I understand that in many ways, the Chinese schools have not been able to give their students that, a strong mastery of the English language. Is that a major concern? Aren't the Chinese schools going to respond to this by somehow bolstering the study of English within the schools to make them more relevant to the needs of the market and make their students more marketable?
I think as far as the Chinese primary school is concerned, of course, all the school is paying a lot of attention as far as the standard of English, this sort of thing. But they have also to learn this Bahasa Malaysia and this Chinese. So because of that, you know, the time allocated for the English subject, this sort of the English language, you know, is. You cannot compare maybe to this national primary school, this sort of thing. But I think generally speaking, I think the parent has been sending their children to these tuition school, this sort of thing, and there are some school that also provide extra sort of classes for the student. Try to beef up the English and that sort of thing.
I understand. Well, one of the bigger problems is also the UEC exam. Now, has the blockage in terms of getting UEC recognized by the government so that graduates from Chinese schools can, you know, go into the mainstream easily, go to university and such, has that been resolved?
This one, we are still working hard on that, you know, because there are certain issues that there are. That we had to resolve with the education department. We hope that we can come to some kind of consensus, kind of understanding with the education department. They were talking about, you know, they may need to have some changes in the syllabus as far as history is concerned. Maybe there is some misconception as far, you know, what the Chinese independent school, the students study as far as history is concerned, that maybe the perception is not right in the sense that they are thinking that, you know, Chinese independent school is studying all the Chinese history about China, this sort of thing, which is not actually correct. So we are trying to talk to the education department, you know, let them know and then make them more clear about, you know, the subject that we have been doing, the subject that the Chinese independent school student has been studying, this sort of thing. So we are still working on that. We hope that very
Jared,
soon we can have some good news.
Dato, Rita Sim from Sensa wants to kind of weigh in on this.
Yeah, I think there's actually a challenge sending children to Chinese schools as well, because you know they have to study Chinese, English and Bahasa. And the thing is that it's actually quite a struggle and quite a lot of pressure on the child to be able, and then they end up, right, a majority of them end up not being good in any of the languages. And if education is supposed to be an upward mobility, so what language and to gain knowledge as well? Education is for you to gain more knowledge so that you can go into the labour force, and it's for your economic future.
But
so
it's also, Rita, it's also, and I think Dato was suggesting, it's also a cultural issue, isn't it? And the Chinese schools and the learning of Mandarin is also about cultural identity. Isn't it not?
Yeah, I think that's always been the case among the Chinese community. But I also want to bring up that among some of the concerns raised by middle-class Chinese parents is the fact that in Chinese schools, the creativity of their children have been stifled.
Yes, so too much rote learning.
Yes, exactly. You know, very too much discipline, too much rote learning. And I know a couple of Chinese parents who have actually pulled their kids out from Chinese schools and sent them to private schools because of the fear of their creativity being stifled.
Danto, Vincent, just last question for you. How do you respond to these criticisms of the Chinese schools? Is Chinese schools, changing their curriculum to become more responsive to market needs? Are they also looking at the best practices in terms of pedagogy and teaching?
That's why, as far as Dong Zhong is concerned, you know, when our new leadership coming, we are looking into the curriculum. We are looking into the subject as far as the whether there is any. We believe that there is some changes need to be made, and then we are planning to do about these changes, this sort of thing. But I think what is important is that, you know, of course, we know that it is, we understand that it's difficult to master three languages, this sort of thing. But I think what happened is that, you know, for those good students, or very good students, you know, to master three languages, you know, it is not a problem. Of course, there are some poorer students that, you know, will be difficult for them. But then I think what happened is that when they go into the Chinese independent school, you know, the language of for instruction, for study is this mentoring. So because it's the mother tongue, this sort of thing, it's much easier for them to learn the subject, this sort of thing. So for those students who are, you know, not that good, this sort of thing, of course they will go to do more as far as the Chinese language is concerned, then maybe one other subject, other language, this sort of thing.
Right. Thank you so much, Dr. Vincent, for joining us this morning. There are more questions I wanted to ask you about, you know, being from Sarawak, but we're running out of time. Thank you again for joining us, and Sin Yin Kuai Le.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. So that was Temong Dato Vincent Lau Lee Meng, President of the United Schools Committees Association Malaysia, or Dong Zhong. Rita, you had a comment, and both of you had comments, criticism about the Chinese community. Does the Chinese community itself engage in a robust debate about its institutions, whether it's the clan associations or the schools? I mean, their relevance, whether they're going to fade out in time, and how to cope with this new and very dynamic, changing fabric of Malaysia.
Don't get me wrong, no, there are actually merits of Chinese education too, you know, in the way that, you know, in certain ways that the teaching methods. But you see, the danger, the point that we have here is that once they reach secondary and then tertiary education, and usually go to Taiwan, Hong Kong, or even China to study, and some who wants to hedge their bets will go to Australia depending on their standards of English or UK or the US. Now, the Chinese community actually is changing. Previously, they were looking towards the leaderships in political parties, and I'm glad you raised this point, because we see a movement of a lot of the Chinese are moving now more to the types of the NGOs, less and less of the clan types, but more like Buddhist associations, Serchi groups are doing social work. So it seems as if that they are also looking for new types of leaders, not necessarily political leaders, right, but religious leaders.
Kian Ming, your views on leadership within the Chinese community, and also whether there's a robust conversation debate.
Yeah, I think on the issue of debate, especially in terms of education, any education system needs reform over time to cope with rising and new challenges. But I think one of the main challenges in association with trying to reform the Chinese school system is that there's a huge trust deficit among the Chinese community and also the government, in the sense that any reform that is proposed is seen as a move by the the government to try to reduce the Chinese characteristic of these Chinese schools. So I think as long as that trust deficit is there, it would be very difficult to engage in a meaningful discussion on education reform. So one of the things which I think we've not brought up yet is to propose education decentralization so that you can take an element of politics out of education and then put it at the local and the state level so that it doesn't become such a big area of contestation, at least at the national level.
But I think that what has happened in the Malaysian education system is that it's too fragmented. You know, policymakers trying to please too many all the communities, right? And then it ends up that there's so much pressure on really what should education be in this modern world, all right? And don't forget that we are always looking at the Chinese schools, but what about the religious schools and what are they teaching there? So what is this whole education system, a Malaysian education system that should evolve to make us competitive?
And maybe also give us some cultural ballast. I think we can't deny the issue of culture. Thank you so much. This is a conversation that clearly we're going to have over and over again. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. Rita Sim, director and co-founder of think tank Center for Strategic Engagement and Sense, and Yang Bohomat, Dr. Ong Kian Ming, DAP member of Parliament for Serdang, and also a longtime BFM friend and a contributor. Sin Yin Kuala to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And also on the line was Temenggong Dato' Vincent Lau Lee Ming, President of the United Schools Committee Association Malaysia of Dong Zhong. I'm Sharad Kutin, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.